First to Boston. It was the biggest attack on US soil since 9/11, the Boston Marathon bombing. It killed three, injured more than 260. Today, the surviving suspect, Jokhar Tsarnaev, appeared in court before the panel of potential jurors. And the controversy has already begun. Over what, we'll explain in just a minute. First, a reminder of what happened back on Monday, the 15th of April 2013, as runners poured over the finish line of the marathon.
This big explosion right at the finish line, this big plumes of white smoke coming up. You're kind of shocked and you're looking around, and then 10 seconds later, another one goes off in the other direction. And then we're like, oh, then chaos broke up. We just saw blood and people lying on the road, runners, not sure what to do.
I heard the blast go off, and we kind of locked eyes, and I said, what was that? And then the second one went off, and I could just tell that both of us had this look of fear in our eyes, that we knew that something really bad had happened.
An 8-year-old boy is among the dead. His mother and sister were seriously hurt. The streets here still echo to the sound of sirens, police motorcycles, and the occasional circling helicopter. All around what the local police commissioner has described as the most complex crime scene his department has ever seen.
That police operation led to the trial of Jokhar Tsarnaev beginning today. He denies all 30 charges against him. If found guilty, he could face the death penalty. The other suspect in the bombing, his elder brother Tamerlan, died in the manhunt which followed the attack. What we want to discuss is how far American justice itself may be on trial. There's a division of opinion over whether Jokhar Tsarnaev can expect impartial treatment given that the case is to be heard in Boston. We brought together Jo Ellen Demetrius, she's a jury and trial consultant who's worked on many high-profile trials, and first, Harvey Silvergate, a criminal defence and civil liberties lawyer.
I've been a criminal defence and civil liberties lawyer since 1967. I can't remember a case where a change of venue was more obvious. I don't see how they can get a fair trial from any jury that they can select. I don't care whether there's a there's 5 million people living in the area from which they can select. I don't see how they can get a jury of 12 people who don't have very strong feelings about the bombing of this iconic institution, the Boston Marathon.
Well, they might have strong feelings, I'm sure. Most of them, if not all of them, will have very strong feelings about the carnage that was wrought at the Boston Marathon. It doesn't mean that they won't be impartial when it comes to weighing the evidence, will it?
Well, I think it does, because this is an attack on the entire community. It is not just an attack on the people who were killed or injured. Furthermore, when the alleged bombers were on the loose for 3 days, they were pursued by state and federal officers, a large number of them. And the governor asked the residents of several towns to remain indoors. Shelter in place was the word that they used. And so the citizenry of this area in eastern Massachusetts had a real sense that their whole way of life was being threatened. They couldn't even go out of their homes onto the streets.
Joanne Demetrius, what do you make of that argument?
I totally agree with Harvey in that because there has been so many people touched, not only personally, but within the community, that it will be very, very difficult to find people who are going to keep an open mind. And I'm actually shocked, but not surprised, unfortunately, that this judge has made this decision. And unfortunately, I think at this point, the only avenue for the defense attorneys to go after is an appeal on the issue of no change of venue in the case that there is a conviction.
You said difficult. You didn't say impossible.
I have been involved in a number of high-profile trials, from Rodney King, which, by the way, was changed. The venue was changed in that case. And, unlike the terror that certainly we saw in the Boston bombing situation, there was terror in Los Angeles at the time, and the judge had the wherewithal and the good sense to actually move it to a contiguous community just north of Los Angeles. So I think it will be absolutely impossible to find people who can keep an open mind.
Harvey Silvergate, isn't it going to be the case that anywhere in the United States, I mean, you'd have had to have had the curtains drawn and all your internet, TV and everything else switched off, not to have been aware of what was going on in Boston and not to have in some way been touched by it.
The further you get from Massachusetts, the less people are going to feel personally threatened. This institution is iconic for the entire state of Massachusetts. The further you're away, the more likely it is that the jurors would not feel this personal reason to get these guys.
Do you really think, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but do you really think people are that irrational when it comes to these, you know, making perhaps the most serious decision in some ways of their lives if they're sitting on a case which could result in a death penalty? Aren't most people, especially after an exhaustive jury selection process, going to be incredibly careful about locking away any sort of emotional response they might have against the person who's standing in the dock?
Well, you're assuming that rationality here plays a different role than I think rationality plays. I think that the rational juror would feel very personally threatened, and the rational juror would want the person who did this to be either put away for life or executed.
Joanne and Demetrius, how, if you were involved in the jury selection, how would you go about trying to ensure that out of this pool, to me it seems extraordinarily large pool of 1,200 potential jurors, that you could select 12 who are going to do a decent job?
Well, I think there's two ways. Number one is certainly you're going to be looking, the defense should be looking for those contrarians, those people who don't necessarily trust the U.S. government, those people who do not have any belief kind of in the American way, so to speak, I think number one. Number two, I certainly would be recommending to them that they look for those individuals that have what we call a low NFA. NFA stands for need for affect. So people with high NFA are people who are much more emotional. People, those are the people the prosecution's going to look for. Those are the people that are going to cry. Those are the people that are going to have the nightmares. Versus looking for somebody with a low affect, somebody who is going to be less touched by that. But I have to say, in this day and age, the ratio between the two is pretty significant in terms of there are many more people in this day and age that have high NFA that have low NFA.
That was Jo Ellen Demetrius explaining to us the concept of NFA. She was also joined by Harvey Silvergate.